Kaya FM 95.9. Sidebar every Monday to Thursday from 7 to 8 p.m. on Kaya FM 95.9.
It's just gone 7 o'clock. You're listening to Kaya FM 95.9, and this is Sidebar with Dr. Cindy Van Sail. But of course, I'm not Dr. Cindy Van Sail. My name is Sutume, and I'm standing in for Dr. Cindy. I'm going to be with you for the next hour, 7 o'clock until 8 o'clock. And today, we are talking nutrition. I know a lot of people, when they hear the words nutrition, we always think about diets and all sorts of things. But today, we're talking about nutrition in relation to health, and more specifically cancer, as well as pregnancy, which, you know, there's all sorts of tales, old wives' tales, what your doctor says, what you feel like eating, what you want to eat. And all of that is what we're going to be discussing this evening. And we're going to be joined by two different dietitians who specialize in both cancer as well as in pregnancy. So all that and more still coming up right here on Kaya FM 95.9.
Sidebar with Dr. Cindy on Kaya FM 95.9.
So it's a minute after 7 o'clock, as I said to you earlier on, that we are talking about nutrition today, and we are talking specifically about nutrition that is related to pregnancy. That conversation is going to be happening a little bit later on, where we're talking about what it means to be pregnant and what it is that you are meant to be eating when it comes to pregnancy. And then, of course, we're also going to be talking about cancer. That conversation is what we're going to be starting with. And we're going to be joined on the line by a nutritionist named Omi Naidu, who is a dietitian and specifically specializes in nutrition when it comes to cancer, because it's a very scary disease, and I would imagine that it would be a very scary time for most people. And now you still have to figure out the nutrition that goes with having cancer. And Dr. Omi joins us now on the line. A very good evening to you and a warm welcome.
Good evening, Cindy, to you and your listeners. I'm actually a clinical dietitian.
A clinical dietitian.
Is critical care and oncology.
Yeah, you know, I think Cindy would know more because she's a doctor. I'm not. I'm standing in for her. My name is Sutumeya.
Oh, okay.
So I am completely clueless. So this conversation is going to be a learning moment for me, and I think our listeners as well. So we are talking about cancer, and we're talking about nutrition when it comes to cancer. And I think one of the biggest things when it comes to nutrition and when it comes to cancer, especially if you follow the internet and you follow what happens on social media, it's the link between food and nutrition. What is it? Is there foods that actually cause cancer, or is that a myth?
Okay, so there's definitely food groups that increase your risk for cancer. But if we take a step back, we've got to understand there's two factors. There's your controllable risk factors and your uncontrollable. So your controllable or your uncontrollable risk factors would be things like genetics and environment that you can't change whether you're going to have cancer or not.
Okay.
And then up to 50% of your risk of cancer development is your diet, your lifestyle, and those are things that are in your hands and you can definitely control. So to answer your question, there's definitely food groups that have been studied that have been shown that increase or even decrease your risk of cancer.
And let's start with the food groups that actually increase the risk of cancer. And I'm saying this because I once read an article that talked about eating anything that's overheated or burnt food, and that if you eat too much of that, that can lead to cancer. So when we talk about foods that can actually contribute or cause cancer, what foods are we talking about?
Okay, so those food groups talk into four groups. The first one is your processed meat. So studies have shown us that if you have more than 50 grams per day, it can increase your risk for colorectal cancer up to 20 to 30%, as well as red meat. So us as South Africans are known to have large intakes of red meat.
Fries.
Yeah, fries, your poikikos, those sort of things. And what the studies show us is that if you're having a high red meat intake, it definitely increases your risk for cancer. That's your first two groups. The other one is your glycemic index. So this basically means how much of carbohydrates does the meal have and how quick does it push up your blood sugars. Studies have shown us that if you're having a high GI diet, so lots of fruit juices, cool drinks, processed foods like pizzas, that when you have this kind of diet, it can increase your risk for things like prostate cancer by up to 80 to 90%. And the last category of foods are your calorie-dense foods. these are foods like your chocolate, sweets, cakes, fried foods, and fatty foods. They increase your risk of obesity, and obesity is found to be a risk factor for multiple cancers.
Okay. Well, if you're just joining us, it's just gone 5 minutes after seven. You're listening to Kaya FM 95.9. And the other voice that you're listening to is Dr. Omi Naidu. And today we're talking about nutrition. Starting off, we're talking about nutrition in relation to cancer. And you're more than welcome to give us a call if you've got any questions. The number to dial is 086-000-959. You can also send us an SMS on 36959, or else you can send us a WhatsApp on 063-688-0959. Our number again is 086-000-959. And this is if you would like to ask any questions that are related to nutrition, that are related to cancer. Maybe you are a cancer survivor, maybe you're a cancer sufferer, or maybe you have somebody in your family that has cancer and you are genetically predisposed to cancer, and you just want to understand what it is that you can do in the moment in order to make sure that you don't develop cancer, or maybe, doctor, if you do develop cancer, that it's not as severe. Is that even possible? That if you are at risk, say you come from a long line of women in your family having breast cancer, but you are better off in terms of nutrition, you know more about nutrition and health, does that greatly reduce the risk of cancer, or does it mean that if you do get cancer, it won't be as bad?
So there's two elements to that. You can reduce your risk to some extent, but you can't prevent it. So if the genetic and the environmental factors are significant, then you may still end up with cancer. But you've got to understand that cancer is something that is caused by what we call free radical damage. Mm-hmm. And sort of the treatment to that is having lots of antioxidants. So if you're having a diet that's having a lot of fresh fruit and vegetables, that means you're having a high antioxidant content, which neutralizes the damage at an early stage, as opposed to the cancer cell developing into a larger tumor. So that is one element. And then the second element is just to make sure that if you do have cancer, we know that cancer causes you to lose a lot of muscle. Mm-hmm. So going into the cancer, if you had a high-protein diet, it helps you to almost neutralize that muscle loss.
Okay, so that works in that sense. So it's a twofold sort of approach.
Yes.
Okay, so let's talk about sugar as well, because I heard you talking about fruit. And sugar, I mean, I suppose in general, sugar is never really a great thing. But there's obviously good sugar, which would be the sugar that comes in fruit. How does that work in relation to cancer? So should you limit your fruit intake? Should you be focusing on fruit that is high in antioxidants and maybe lower in terms of the sugar content? Maybe looking at your apples versus mangoes and what else? And pineapples.
So with most patients, I normally advocate, especially if they're not diabetic, is just indulging in as many fruit as they like. But it's also about being mindful. You know, if you're having a fruit content or fruit portion that's extremely sweet where you feel you need to have water thereafter, that tells you that there's too much sugar in there. You know, the research shows us that when you're having a lot of glucose, it pushes up your blood sugar level and your body needs to release insulin. Insulin is what we call an inflammatory hormone, and the inflammatory processes can increase the risk for cancer at a later stage.
And the foods that limit, or at least that help, that assist in terms of fighting cancer or the cancer genes or cancer cells, what foods are those?
Okay, so if I saw a cancer patient, which I see every day in my practice, the first thing I advise them is to have a high-protein diet. So when we mean protein, we know that cancer is catabolic, which means it increases your body's requirements on one side, but on the other side, the side effects of cancer, like your treatment, could cause nausea, vomiting, diarrhea. So on one end, you need more and your body eats less. So what tends to happen is on a day-to-day basis, you start to burn a lot of muscle to meet that requirement. So you see cancer patients losing a lot of muscle. So the first thing is having good protein. I normally try to advise them to have a lot of plant-based protein, so things like beans, peas, lentils, and
legumes.
Soya. Yeah, absolutely. Those are the better options. I would also advise on a high antioxidant diet. So when we say high antioxidant, lots of brightly colored fruit and veg. The brighter the color, the higher the antioxidant component. And the third element is making sure that they have good quality carbohydrates. When I say good quality, I mean things that are higher in fiber and roughage. So I would definitely omit white rice, white bread, white pasta, because we're saying that when you have a food group that pushes up the sugar, it worsens your risk for cancer.
Of cancer. Well, if you're just joining us, it's just gone 10 minutes after 7. You're listening to Kaya FM 95.9. You're listening to Sidebar with Dr. Cindy Van Sail. That will be on a normal day-to-day basis. But today, I'm standing in for Dr. Cindy. My name is Sotumeya. Together for the next hour, 7 until 8 o'clock. And we are talking about nutrition. The other voice that you're listening to there is Dr. Omi Naidu, who's just taking us through what it means to be mindful when it comes to cancer in terms of your nutrition, what you probably should try to avoid, what you probably should be eating, or maybe you are in recovery, maybe you are in remission, maybe you've just discovered that you've got cancer and you're looking for the best ways in order to fight the disease, and maybe you've got some questions, then you're more than welcome to please give us a call on 086-000-0959, drop us an SMS 36959 at a cost of 150. And remember, you can also go to Twitter at Kaya FM Talk and use the hashtag Sidebar with Cindy for any questions that you may want to ask Dr. Omi Naidu, talking about cancer, of course, and talking about nutrition. And Doctor, you know, you've just said something very important. You talked about the protein and how important it is to have protein. You know, it's one of those, you know, the internet can be very misleading, where, you know, you read a lot about the fact that, you know, maybe try to stay away or limit your protein intake when it comes to cancer. But, you know, I think it's very interesting that you talked about other sources of protein versus meat, you know, like the nuts and all other things, plant-based protein. Is there a difference? Is all protein equal, or protein is not equal? Like there's meat protein and there's the plant protein, but they're not equal in the bigger spectrum of things.
So in terms of cancer risk, unfortunately, they're not equal. Your animal protein has been shown, like your red meat specifically, it's been implicated in various carcinogenic processes between cancer developing processes, whereas your plant-based proteins are very high in fiber, and fiber has been shown in multiple studies to reduce your risk of cancer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so stick to the plant-based protein. Are there any foods in particular that are associated with the different types of cancer, or cancer is cancer?
There are different foods. So, for instance, your red meat and your processed meat is associated with the high incidence of your gut cancer, so your stomach or gastric cancer, as well as your colorectal cancer. And your high GI food is associated with prostate cancer. But, you know, in general, if I were to speak to any sort of person that doesn't have a medical condition, my advice to them would always be, let's try and increase your plant-based protein or your plant-based food, as well as incorporate a lot more fresh fruit and vegetables, and be mindful of the type of carbohydrates that you're taking in. Mm-hmm. The moment you're taking in a white bread, a white rice, or white pasta, know that that normally corresponds with a bit of an inflammation or inflammatory effect in the body. So if we can control that or limit that, we can help ourselves, set ourselves up for better health.
Mm. And another major thing, I think, when it comes to cancer as well, is that many people usually find out a lot later because, you know, symptoms vary from person to person. Sometimes it takes a while for a person to know what they're looking out for. And I know this is a bit of a taking away from what we're talking about in terms of nutrition. But are there any, you know, any telltale signs? And I know that there's different kind of cancers, but how do you sort of have an idea that maybe something might not be right here? I know we should know our bodies. We should know how you're feeling. But generally, when it comes to cancer, what are the first things that you start to see?
So a lot of the time it means, you know, this is where we presented with this complexity of COVID and this pandemic. What we're finding is that patients are doing less of their screenings. They're doing less of their gastroscopes and colonoscopies and less of the sort of breast examinations and their follow-ups with their doctors just because of this fear of contracting COVID.
Mm-hmm.
The unfortunate effect is that cancer is something often that's time-sensitive, which means the later it's picked up, the worse the outcome. So very often, you know, I would advocate to patients to be mindful of any changes in their body and to also follow up. You know, if you knew you're due for your mammogram or your pap smear or your colonoscopy, go and get those things done regardless of COVID, because, you know, very often if something is picked up early, it can change the entire outcome of it.
Mm-hmm. And you know that what you're saying makes complete and utter sense. But you might have somebody that's listening that might think that, you know, those are things that are not available to me, that are not necessarily readily and easily available for me to go to the gynecologist or, you know, go to the clinic. Some people think that, you know, it's too much work. If I'm not feeling ill, why should I have to get up and go and queue at a clinic in order to find out something that might not even be there? Whereas maybe I can look out for something in my body. I mean, I know with breast cancer, they say feel for lumps, any changes in your breast. And I think with prostate, it's always the pain and you know what I mean? But are there other things, you know, that are general when it comes to cancer?
Yeah,
you
can say, absolutely. Yeah. Mm. Absolutely. So if I'm looking at a patient that has unexplained weight loss, where, you know, they're not trying to lose weight and they're consciously losing more than 10% of their body weight in less than a 3 to 6 month period. If I'm talking with a patient, or if I'm looking at a patient that has bleeding when they pass a stool and there's no apparent reason, that warrants further investigation. And, you know, if you're having chronic fatigue with all of the other symptoms that I've mentioned, that then means you need to get a workup from a medical perspective to find out and investigate further what could be the cause of it. There could be some minor causes, but at the end of the day, the objective is to rule out the major cause of cancer, because the earlier we get in, the better the outcome.
So those are things that you need to look out for. If you are losing weight and it is not your intention to lose weight, you must be worried. If you've got any bit of blood, if you're passing stool, or maybe if you're urinating as well, is that, that's also possible, right?
Yeah, but, you know, there's many other causes. But the ultimate thing is to seek medical attention for your GP or your medical doctor to now start going through the stage of trying to rule out all of the different causes of it. And eventually, the worst cause or the most significant cause is a cancer, and then that would need intervention.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're just joining us, 17 minutes after 7, you're listening to Kaya FM 95.9. You're listening to Sidebar with Cindy. My name is Sotumeya, standing in for The Good Doctor. And we are talking about nutrition this evening. More specifically, we're talking about nutrition in terms of cancer. And a little later on, we're going to be talking about nutrition and pregnancy. And I know this one is a highly popular one, because, I mean, obviously, pregnancy is something that's very... that's an everyday thing. So I know a lot of people are always wondering what to eat when they're pregnant, what not to eat, the myths and everything else around it. So that conversation is going to be happening just after 20 past, just after the ads. We're going to be having that conversation. But in the meanwhile, we are still talking about cancer and we're still talking about food. So, doctor, what is the big takeaway in terms of nutrition and cancer? I mean, what is the one message that we should all leave with when we think cancer and we think nutrition?
I think the most significant thing is knowing that we as South Africans have been clinically shown to be very obese, meaning that we, as a small country at the tip of Africa, we're coming up in the top 5 to 10 countries in the world in terms of obesity rates. Now, unfortunately, obesity is what we call a low-grade inflammatory state. So it releases a lot of inflammatory hormones, and this then increases tumor growth. So with that being said, for anybody listening, if you could help yourself to lose 5 to 10% of your body weight, you could reduce your risk for cancer cell development.
Okay. So first step, lose weight. Lose weight and look after the nutrition and maybe hit the gym if you would like to steer clear of the big C.
Absolutely. And again, it's not going to prevent it in completion, but at the end of the day, if you do get it, your outcome can be improved if you've got a lower BMI, or body mass index.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Dr. Naidu, and thank you very much for, you know, giving us that information on cancer and food. I think many times we're not aware of what we put in our mouths usually has a very big effect or impact on what goes out in terms of the things that we contract, the diseases and all sorts of things that happen to our bodies. But thank you very much for having a chat to us.
Thanks for having me on. Have a good evening.
Thank you very much. So that is Dr. Naidu talking to us about cancer and, of course, talking to us about nutrition that's around cancer. You are more than welcome to join in on this conversation. If you've got any questions at all, the number to dial is 086-00-00959. We are going to be switching gears a bit after the ads, and we're still going to be talking about nutrition, but this time around we're going to be talking about pregnancy. And I know, you know, when you are pregnant for the first time, and you read all sorts of things about fish, about eggs, about this and that, and you've got all these questions and you're not sure if you're putting your baby at risk. you might want to join in on this conversation. The number to dial is 086-000-959. Drop us an SMS 36959. Remember, we're also on WhatsApp. The number is 063-688-0959. And use hashtag sidebar with Cindy. This is on Twitter. Or also tweet us at KaiFM Talk. So still having that conversation just after the ads. It is 23 minutes after 7. You're listening to Kaya FM 95.9. You are listening to Sidebar with Dr. Cindy Van Ciel. My name is Sutu Meyer, standing in for the good doctor, who is feeling a little under the weather, but hopefully she's going to be feeling better very soon, and we'll be back with you on the airwaves. And of course, we're talking about nutrition this evening. Our first segment, we were talking about nutrition in relation to cancer, and now we're going to be talking about nutrition in relation to pregnancy. But of course, if you've got any nutrition related questions, when it comes to your health, then you're more than welcome to give us a call on 086-000-959. Remember, you can also drop us an SMS 36959 at a cost of R1.50. And joining us now on the line is Professor Lizanne Duplessis, who is a registered dietitian, and she's going to be talking to us about pregnancy and nutrition. Dr. Lizanne, thank you so much for joining us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yes, a big good evening to you. We are talking about something that is, I suppose, very interesting. And I'm sure you get loads and loads of pregnant women that come in and have all sorts of questions about nutrition. But before we get into this topic, Dr. Lizanne, I'm going to throw you straight to the sharks and have a caller ask you a question. Because we have somebody who has been holding on and wanting to find out one or two things about nutrition. We've got Molly giving us a call. Molly, thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. And you?
Good, good. I just wanted to find out, I have a lot of constipation. Sorry.
No, so it's fine.
I just wanted to find out, like, how can I, what can I eat better in terms of making that, you know, getting a better nutrition that will help me with constipation, because it's terrible. So I don't like fiber, though, and I don't like oats.
Okay.
So those
and
are
you
like,
don't like prunes.
And yeah, even prunes. Prunes don't really help me. My stomach is like really, like if I eat the original prunes or the prune juice, mm-hmm. it doesn't really help. Oh. But yeah, what could I possibly use?
Okay, let's hear from Professor Lizanne if she's got any questions. Do you have any questions for Molly?
Yes, well, at first I just want to say, yeah, with the sympathy, it happens during pregnancy for various reasons. It's to do with hormones, it also has to do with the pressure that the growing baby is putting onto the gut. And it's a complaint that we hear quite often from pregnant mums. So I've already heard that you said you don't like fiber, the oats, the prunes and so on. But there's always something that you like. So, yeah, other forms of fiber that is not so obvious. All our fruits and vegetables contain fiber. So concentrate on the vegetables and fruits that you do like. And, of course, that has to go with lots of meat and fluids. Preferably clean and safe water. If you get tired of water, as we all do at times, tea and coffee, not too much of that. One cup a day you can still have. But some of our herbal teas like rooibos, our powdery South African rooibos tea is very good. And in summertime you can make nice iced teas with it, and it doesn't have to be expensive if you make your own. So just also concentrate on light exercise. That is the other recommendation that we always give to all people, but also specifically during pregnancy. So it's a combination of fiber in fruits and vegetables and whole grain foods. It doesn't have to be oats if you don't like it. There are always alternatives that a dietitian can suggest for you. But then also your fluids and light exercise. That combination is the best recommendation that we can provide for constipation.
And what happens if you're not pregnant, Prof? Because I'm not sure if she is pregnant. What happens if you're not pregnant but you suffer from like chronic constipation? Molly, are you pregnant?
No, I'm not pregnant.
Not pregnant. Okay, so what happens if you're not pregnant?
Sure, so the same recommendations will apply to a non-pregnant person as would in pregnancy. So try those specific and I'm sure there will be some relief. If not, and this is in the case where the this specific recommendation going the natural way, if that doesn't work, you can also go for a fiber supplement that you can get from a pharmacy. You don't have to get a prescription for it. It will be something that you will have to add water to, and that will almost like expand to a gummy kind of consistency, and then you can take that orally, so you buy mouth, you can drink it usually, and that could also then assist. In more severe cases, a doctor may prescribe a suppository, almost like a gelatin vaseline kind of suppository that you can use, which is also often quite successful. But if it doesn't subside, then obviously there would be other medications that you would need and that you would need a prescription for. But we start with the natural things and see if those work first. And of course, you have to be put in all your effort. Do the exercise, take the water, take the fluids, and take the natural fibers. Those are the best to try and sort it out in a natural way. But of course, there are circumstances where it doesn't work, and then you have to go to the next line of treatment,
which is to go to the doctor. Molly, I hope that
helps.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay,
bye.
Great stuff. Bye. So that was Molly giving us a call, talking to us about chronic constipation that she's suffering from and wanting to know what can be done. And, of course, joining us on the line is Professor Lizanne Duplessis, and she's chatting to us about nutrition. We're talking specifically about pregnancy, but it's not limited to that. So if you've got any questions for Professor Lizanne, feel free to give us a call on 0800-00959. If you've got any questions that have got to do with nutrition, if you suffer from something that you think may be assisted with nutrition, the number to dial is 086-00-00959. So, Professor Lizanne, talking about pregnancy, I've got two kids. In my first pregnancy, I went on a very nice baby moon, and I went to this really nice island, and my biggest fear was to have something called jackfruit. I didn't eat it because I was under the impression that should I have something that is foreign that I've never had before, it might affect the baby in some way or another. And I know that it might be a myth, it might be truth, but I think it rings true to a lot of pregnant women, especially in your first pregnancy when you're still a lot more cautious and you try to stay away from just about everything because, you know, you're afraid that the baby will come out and, you know, things might have happened. How true is that, that, you know, there's certain foods that you must definitely stay away from when you're pregnant?
Yeah, sure. And it's always good to be cautious. I think our natural instinct is there to protect the baby, and then that you're not unduly adventurous during that time, which is all good. I mean, that is part of motherhood. But food specifically, usually we say that you shouldn't be having anything raw, in the meat category, specifically meat and fish. So you should be careful because those specific products are prone to bacterial growth. So I would say if you usually have something like sushi, try and steer from that, specifically in the first term, just to make sure. I mean, now specifically in summer, you have to be careful anyway, whether you're pregnant. But with any foods that is kept outside at room temperature, specifically meat and fish and eggs, be careful. Do you boil an egg? Do it properly. Do it. Not all of us enjoy the hard-boiled eggs or scrambled eggs, but rather ensure that it's totally cooked, that it's not to the raw side. You can have that always again when the pregnancy is over. It's not a lifetime that you're pregnant. So those are the general rules around foods that can potentially be contaminated. Also, shellfish and those more exotic kind of things, just be careful because it's something that you can always enjoy post-pregnancy. You don't have to have it during pregnancy. It's a 9-month period, a time that you need to be careful, a time that you need to enjoy, and at a time that you don't want to put yourself at risk. Like in your case, you didn't want to go to hospital while you're on the island.
Exactly.
And then also things like certain cheeses. Some of them almost have like a moldy kind of texture. So those are the ones that you need to be careful of. Normal cheese is fine, but just you can rather err on the safe side than being adventurous during this time and ending up in hospital in a dreadful position where you feel guilty about having something that wasn't really a must-have as part of a healthy diet. So that's kind of the there's no rules there, but I would say that it's better guidance to stay clear from things that you're not exactly sure of the origin of it, specifically in foreign countries. Rather just be safe than sorry.
And what is the danger, Prof? So, I mean, we've talked about, you know, try to stay away from anything that's raw. Meat must be well done. It must be dead. It must not have a pulse. So it must be well done. Your eggs must be well done, and try to steer clear of anything that is underdone. But what are the risks? So in other words, if you continue to eat that kind of food, what are some of the risks that you're posing to yourself and your baby?
Right, so some of these foods can cause just an upset tummy, which is a general just feeling of nausea and maybe diarrhea, which is not necessarily life-threatening, but it's uncomfortable. So you want to avoid those in any way, because during pregnancy you could be nauseous anyway, so mm-hmm. you want to avoid any additional stresses on your body. In other cases, it can be more severe, where you have food poisoning, where the substance, if I can just explain it in simple terms, it might be that a toxin or a byproduct of a bacteria that was in food comes into the bloodstream. Now, that is more dangerous, because, of course, your blood runs over the placenta, runs over mm-hmm. the baby. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to expose the baby to any toxins in the blood. And some of these products that you could ingest could actually lead to a food poisoning, which can spill over to a worse kind of a systemic infection or systemic poisoning, if you want to call that in simple terms. So that is the danger, that it can actually be harmful to the baby, but of course also to the mother. So that is why we just try and caution mothers to rather be safe.
Okay, well, if you're just joining us, it's just gone 25 minutes to 8. You're listening to Kaya FM 95.9. You're listening to Sidebar with Dr. Cindy Van Sail. My name is Sotumea, standing in for Dr. Cindy Van Sail. And we are talking about nutrition. Right now, we're talking to Professor Lazon, and we're talking about nutrition in relation to pregnancy, to expectant mothers. But, of course, the conversation can be broader than that. It can be bigger than that. If you've got any questions that you would like to ask in terms of nutrition, especially when it comes to your health, you know, if you feel like there is something that is bothering you and it might be fixed with nutrition, you can give us a call. I know a lot of people have also said that, you know, I remember once had a conversation where we were talking about gout and whether or not red meat causes gout. So if you've got any of those questions, the number to dial is 086-000-959, or you can drop us an SMS on 36959, and you know, Professor Lazon will try to answer as best as she can. Now, Professor, we were just talking about the foods, you know, and the danger of eating foods that might not be so great for you at the time. It can be more severe. It can just be food poisoning, or it can be something a lot more severe. But another thing as well for a lot of expectant mothers, I know with me, I had very bad acid reflux both times, so much so that I couldn't sleep. And, you know, and you start to think that maybe it's certain foods, something that I'm eating, that makes it worse. But when you are pregnant, are there certain foods that make heartburn worse than, you know, than the next person?
Yes, so reflux is also one of those things, as constipation, that we often find in pregnancy. And once again, the reason is the pressure that the growing fetus places on the what we call sphincters within the your gut. And that pressure then pushes the food up, and you experience that acid taste and the burning sensation.
Mm-hmm.
So there are certain foods that can make it worse, but it's very individual. So we don't have this list of foods that you have to avoid completely, apart from the ones that could be dangerous in the food poisoning category. Some women find that citrus kind of foods with almost like an acidic taste or sour taste, those foods worsen their symptoms. But it's not so for all women. So some actually find that citrus foods like oranges or nachos, clementines, those things may improve their feeling of nausea or reflux. So it's a very individualized approach We don't say, no, you can't have any of these fruits that taste like celery or acidity. Many people will tell you, don't eat that tomato stew, don't drink orange juice. But there isn't a rule around it. It's an individual thing that you need to figure out for yourself. Is something actually causing or worsening the heartburn?
Okay.
If it does, sure. Yeah.
Please carry on, yes.
So if it does cause a problem, then we never suggest to anyone to remove a complete food group from your diet. So we will always suggest alternatives to you. So if you say that you can't drink milk, then we will say, okay, if you can't drink milk, then we will, for instance, suggest that you take yogurt or cheese, but you shouldn't exclude all the products just because milk causes heartburn or milk may be worse than the symptoms of reflux. We will also always suggest an alternative in a specific food group so that you still get your full spread of good vitamins, minerals, and other nutrients. Also, what helps is that you eat and drink like almost an hour or so before you go to bed so that you don't lie flat in a position where the heartburn or reflux can be worsened. So try to eat and then stay upright and then go to bed so an hour or so later. Or when you do eat, always sit in an upright position because any slouching can worsen that pressure that you put on the stomach and the gut. Also, if it helps, maybe to avoid drinking too much fluid during your meals. That's one of the things that often happens. We eat and we drink fluids between while we are eating. Mm-hmm. So if that fluid causes the feeling of fullness and reflux, then rather you take the fluid some time after the meal and some time before the meal, but not with a meal.
Oh, okay.
So, there are those kinds of recommendations that a dietitian can assist mothers with in general, just to make a specific situation more tolerable.
Okay. Well, if you're just joining us, it is 20 minutes to 8. You're listening to Kaya FM 95.9. The number to dial is 086-00-00959. If you'd like to ask Professor Lazan about any questions that are related to nutrition, more specifically to pregnancy and nutrition. But like I said, you know, the conversation is open. If you've got any questions that are around nutrition, give us a call on 086-00-00959. We've got Asanda giving us a call. Asanda, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, and thank you to Prof on the other side as well.
Mm-hmm.
I have a question to ask. So my brother-in-law has been diagnosed with something called autoimmune system that is based on the thyroid gland.
Okay.
So it causes him to swell. He was diagnosed since the beginning of lockdown last year. And it causes him to swell, like in different areas. He'll swell in the hand, he'll swell his feet and stuff like that. So he was recently released from hospital this week, today. Because he had a swelling around his neck and face, so which was also infected. And then now he's based in Maritzburg, and he stays with my mother-in-law, who's a little bit older. Who's older. Sorry, my child is disturbed.
No, don't
so
worry.
So now he's based in the rural area, so the diet there is limited. So we were thinking we're based in Joburg, so we wanted to fetch him. Obviously, we in my house, we do, you know, cook like relatively healthy food and fruit and we're very like healthy wise, if I can put it like that.
Yeah.
But I was wondering if we do bring him, if there is anything specific that we can prepare for him to you know, to help him recover on his
Well, first of all, very sorry for the situation that your brother finds himself in, Asanda. But let's hear from Professor Lazan. Prof, do you have any questions that you'd like to ask Asanda about her brother's condition?
Yes, thank you. I would also just like to say I'm sorry to hear about that. It is or so worrying and stressful when we have close family falling ill. And of course, we've all experienced this during this COVID pandemic that I think we've had so much of it now that, that we are all a little bit traumatized by the bad news and the diseases that we've seen apart from COVID. So I'm very sorry to hear about that. What I can suggest is that you contact the local health department in KZN. They have wonderful dietitians in the rural areas. Some of them are some of my former students that studied at Stellenbosch, and they are really equipped to deal with these kinds of cases on a one-to-one basis. I would not want to give you any specific advice over the radio for this specific condition, because you need a full history and you would need all the medication that is on. You would need to ask some questions, that it's better that you give and get individual advice in this specific case and also treatment. But maybe just to tell you that there are very, very good equipped people out there that can support your brother-in-law, and specifically in the KZN health department, right into the rural areas, there are skilled people that can assist. If you bring to Johannesburg, then the same applies there. We know that the health services are under severe pressure at the moment with COVID, but in all cases, specifically autoimmune diseases, they do assist our patients, and we should trust in our health system. We have highly skilled people, specifically in our secondary and tertiary hospitals, to deal with these kinds of cases.
And Prof, I just want to ask you on behalf of Asanda, are these public hospitals that you can go to and get a dietitian? Do you maybe have, like, you know, where you can at least point in the right direction and say, try these hospitals. They've got, like, great dietitians that are maybe, state-funded?
I wouldn't know all of the different hospitals and the names and the contact details, but what I can tell you is that you could contact the main office of the Department of Health, that the numbers and so forth should be available, or then any specific hospital closest to where the family member stays, and ask them for that information. We have dietitians that work in hospitals and they are stationed there, but we also have dietitians that travel around to different clinics, and they won't visit maybe every day, but they will be there once a week or once a month, depending on the rotations that they do. So my advice would be to try and get hold of the local health center or the local hospital closest to a family member, and then to take it from there.
All right, Asanda, I hope that...
Inquire from the hospital, that because he was based in Maritzburg, but today he was moved to Durban just for further assessment. Maybe I'll try those two hospitals that he was treated at.
Yeah, maybe I'm sure you should be able to get some help there, Asanda, and I really hope that you do get the help that you need. But, you know, like Prof says, you know, like, I think sometimes we have little faith in the state, but, you know, there are skills out there. There are people that are skilled, people that know what they're doing, if you just have a little bit of faith in government hospitals. But thank you very much for giving us that call, Asanda.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. If you're just joining us, it is just after 7:45. You're listening to Kaya FM 95.9. This is Sidebar without Dr. Cindy Van Sale. My name is Sotumeya, standing in for Dr. Cindy. And we are talking about nutrition today. Earlier on, we were talking about nutrition in relation to cancer. And now we're talking about nutrition in relation to pregnancy. But we're also taking any other questions that you might have around nutrition. Just like Asanda, who gave us a call asking about her brother-in-law, who's got an autoimmune disease and wanted to know what is the best food or the best advice when it comes to nutrition and getting him back to his normal healthy self. And joining us on the line is Professor Lizanne Duplessis, who's just holding our hand through this conversation. And you know, doctor, it's very difficult when you get people like Asanda who are looking for help, who are going through quite a bit. But I think it's also very important that you understand. I think a lot of the times we think we can get help just over the phone. It's important that you go and you consult so that you can get a proper examination, right?
Absolutely, yes. Yeah, so of course we would want to help everybody that that reaches out, but it's not wise and it's not actually ethical to do that. You need a very good history before you can give advice with very specific disease conditions. General guidance and so forth is fine to give over the phone and over the radio and the newspapers and magazines, but there is a real need for skilled healthcare in certain circumstances. And I'm very proud to say that in South Africa, as you said, we often lose faith in our government system, but really we train, we are the ones on the training end. We train these healthcare workers. And of course, we put in everything that we can to ensure that our healthcare system, that our their hands are held high and that the standard of training and the standard of care is high, and that we fulfill our responsibility to our patients and to our fellow South Africans. We have that responsibility. And of course, people have been disappointed in so many ways, not only in the healthcare system, in so many other systems, not only government, but private sector. If you think about it, I think in South Africa we have such a mixed bag of emotions about people not living up to our expectations, people that are not truthful. So we were always on the back foot in trusting people. But I can assure you that there are so much skill still in South Africa, because we see everything. We have so many problems here. We have so many different disease conditions. We see it all, and we teach our students how to deal with it, how to assist and so forth. So, yeah, I think that's the positive message that I would like to put out there.
Okay. So, Prof, when you go back to talking about pregnancy and caffeine, which is another big one. I don't know if it's a myth or if it's true that caffeine, stay away from caffeine when you are pregnant. Is that true? Does it cause ADHD? Like, what is the story with caffeine and pregnancy?
Yeah, you know, there are many stories out there. And, of course, caffeine is a stimulant. So you would know that if you want to feel perky in the morning, you would take caffeine to get you that quick fix. But in pregnancy, of course, you do not know how your baby will respond. The same for other substances. So you can't decide on the baby's behalf that, I take my caffeine well, so will my baby. Your baby is different from you in many ways, because it's not only your blood and your DNA and genes, it's also your partners and the families that can be feeding. So caffeine is one of those substances that you can take, and we say that you can take one cup of coffee a day, or the equivalent of one cup of coffee a day. That should be fine. However, there are many other substances that contain caffeine that we don't know of. So certain milk drinks, like chocolate drinks maybe, and certain sugar-sweetened beverages may contain caffeine. Energy drinks contains caffeine. Tea contains caffeine, although it's half of about the amount that you get in coffee. A normal Ceylon English tea contains caffeine. It's rooibos that doesn't contain caffeine. So we have to be careful that we don't say, yeah, you can have a coffee, but then people don't know and they don't read labels and they continue with their habits of drinking a lot of other drinks that also contains caffeine. So that is why we just say, go slow on it. Caffeine is a stimulant, so even people who are not pregnant shouldn't be overindulging in caffeine. And of course, if you mix it with sugar, like our energy drinks, then that caffeine kicks in almost at double quick time because of the sugar that's in the drink. So we really have to be wise with our drinks. And we need to know what we take in and what we put into our
body. So read the labels.
That's it. And make sure that you drink your water first. That is the drink of choice. That is the fluid that your body really needs. The other fluids are there for our enjoyment, and it does contain water. But caffeine can also cause dehydration. So if you take too much of it, you can actually dehydrate. So you need to go slow on it, and then more so during pregnancy and during breastfeeding, because caffeine can be found in breast milk, for instance, and the baby may be fussy. Some babies just go through life easy. They don't mind the caffeine. They're not affected by it. But some babies do get affected, and you will not know until you experiment with it. So if you want to just go slow on the experiment, don't overindulge. That's my guideline that I would put out there.
Mm-hmm. And we know about alcohol, and we know about alcohol syndrome, and that you're supposed to stay away from alcohol. But there's also this, you know, there's also a belief that a glass of red wine doesn't hurt anyone. Is that true? Yeah. Is that not true?
No, that's absolutely nonsense, if I can just say it straight. You know what, we have to be so careful with our babies. As I said, you might think that you can be fine after a glass of wine or any alcoholic beverage. You do not know how that affects your baby. Mm. So during pregnancy, when your blood and the baby's blood is connected, then you cannot say that a glass of wine won't do anything to the baby. You should stay away from alcohol as so far while you're pregnant that you don't even need to see it. So we have so many problems in South Africa with fetal alcohol syndrome, and also those ones that are on the brink of that spectrum. So mothers that may not have been alcoholic or drinking heavily during pregnancy, but that took that glass or two of wine. And
beer, that was another one where people were craving beer.
No, absolutely not. For those 9 months, while your baby is growing, that is the sacrifice that you need to make. Mm-hmm. And I can't stress it enough that during pregnancy, please, please stay away from alcohol, stay away from cigarettes, stay away from other drugs. You do not want to hurt that baby. Mm-hmm. While the baby cannot decide for itself, while it's a recipient of whatever the mother ingests. And the same goes for the partner, because if a partner smokes, and you inhale secondhand smoke, if the partner entices you with alcohol, this is a team effort. So we should have our partners supporting us. We should have our family supporting us. And they're putting pressure on us to partake in risky behavior. And when I say risky behavior, I mean, we can talk at length about it. It can include much more than just alcohol, drugs, and cigarettes. But we'll stick to that for the moment. During breastfeeding, of course, the mother's blood and the baby's blood isn't connected anymore, but breast milk is a substance that a mother produces that flows from her body to the baby. And you can still, you can find remnants of alcohol in breast milk.
In the breast milk, yeah.
So it is better to abstain from alcohol also during breastfeeding. But for those mothers who drink recreationally and do not overindulge, sometimes it has been said that mothers actually relax when they have a bit of wine, and then the breastfeeding comes more naturally.
Now, I heard champagne. I had a friend who said a glass of champagne. Like, her milk was not coming in until she had a glass of champagne.
Oh,
and
wow.
Then she had, like, too much milk after that. So I heard
well, that sounds like
story.
Magic.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I would give a one-on-one consultation again and discuss this at length with a mother while breastfeeding. I wouldn't put it out as a public health message that mothers can enjoy their alcohol while they're breastfeeding. That is not what we are advocating for. But on a one-on-one consultation, there are always more detail that can be discussed and that can be fleshed out. But there's a rule, absolutely. We don't want to make too many rules in nutrition, but the rule for pregnancy is no alcohol at all.
No alcohol, and try to limit caffeine. And caffeine especially, because, like you said, it's not just the coffee. There are many other things that have caffeine that we might not be aware of. So you might have had a cup of coffee, but in fact, based on everything else that you've eaten, you've actually had 3 cups of coffee.
That's correct. Yes, absolutely.
Okay, so before we let you go, we're about to run out of talk time. What are some of the myths? I mean, I know, you know, you hear all sorts of stories. Don't eat this, eat that. And then some things just sound just ridiculous. Like, you just wonder if this is actually true. What are some of the myths when it comes to nutrition and pregnancy?
Ooh, there are so many. I don't know where to start.
Your top three.
Yeah, so maybe just to start off to say that people should consult the professionals that know about nutrition. And those are dietitians and nutritionists that studied for a four-year degree and not those ones who read a book somewhere on a shelf, because that happens. And not being disrespectful to people who read and understand nutrition, but really we cannot afford that so much misinformation is out there about nutrition, and it's such an important part of our lives. And it's also part of our livelihoods, and it is part of our resilience, and that is how we can actually curb the ongoing generational poverty cycles. We can break down so many things with good nutrition. If our children grow up to be strong and healthy, they can have a better future. So nutrition is really a serious topic, and people should be taking it seriously and ask the professionals who study this specific field and study it well. So if we think about pregnancy, I think, number one, people will tell you that you can't do this, you can't do that, you can't eat this, you can't eat that. And I want to just assure the mothers that if they eat food in the whole food state, so in the natural state, be that fruits, vegetables, and the cooked versions of meat and fish and eggs, and if they take legumes, beans, and so forth, something that you can still recognize as food, something that is not packaged in boxes and tins.
And processed, yeah.
That's it, that are ultra-processed foods, the real food. That would be my number one message. Eat real, whole foods, and eat your fruits and vegetables fresh, and the others in a safe condition where it's cooked.
All right. Thank you so much, Prof. We're going to have to leave it there because we've run out of time. But this was such a great conversation and quite a big eye-opener, I think, for many people. But thank you so much. Thank you for your time. Thank you very much. That was Professor Lazan Duplessis talking to us about nutrition, and more importantly, talking to us about nutrition in relation to pregnancy. So that's all we have for you this evening. I will be back tomorrow standing in for Dr. Cindy. From me, Sotomayor, it is goodbye, and do enjoy the rest of your evening.
Rewinding Kaya FM on FM Rewind. Visit kayafm.co.za for more.